The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now begin with oral questions put by members to Minister, the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before I begin, I just want to say to the Deputy Premier, would she please pass on the condolences of those of us on this side of the House to the Premier and his family today. Mr. Speaker, less than 2 weeks ago, the government issued a press release stating, and I quote, "We've worked hard to shift from a smoking culture toward a smoke-free culture. We do not want to lose ground." Well, Mr. Speaker, it turns out they didn't work that hard at all. Fact is, half of our high school students who smoked in the last 30 days chose flavored tobacco, Mr. Speaker. And for those that are wondering what flavored tobacco is, I will just describe a quote. "They look like fruit roll-ups, they smell like bubble gum, but they can kill like tobacco." Mr. Speaker, I thought we agreed this was bad for our province. I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier, what changed? Why is the government now going to allow flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I did want to just thank the Leader of the Opposition for his condolences to the McNeil family. And in answer to the question, I would like to ask the Health Minister to answer that question.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for the question. We had a bill that we brought in that was the most progressive in the country. We heard a lot at law amendments that asked us to take a look at some aspects of the bill. And over the next number of weeks and months, we'll do further consulting. But you know what the bill does, Mr. Speaker? It puts us in the strongest position to eliminate e-cigarettes from public places and from selling e-cigarettes and e-juice to the youth of our province.
The Honourable Leader, the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'm sorry, but that is not good enough, Mr. Speaker. The only winner today is big tobacco. This government is not listening to the parents and the students of Nova Scotia. You know who the presenters were that wanted them to allow flavored tobacco that came to this House to make that point? Rothmans, Mr. Speaker. Imperial Tobacco, JTI, the largest tobacco pushers in the country, Mr. Speaker. They had a choice. They could listen to them, or they could listen to the parents and students who do not want flavored tobacco, which, by the way, is described as watermelon-flavored cigarillos, maple syrup cigars that smell like warm pancakes, skinny, minty-flavored cigarettes that look like lipstick. That's what we're talking about, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier, why did the government cave into big tobacco instead of protecting the young people of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Deputy Premier, the Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We have not indeed caved to big tobacco, and during the consulting process, there's one thing you can be sure of, Mr. Speaker, is that I won't be consulting with big tobacco. And so we know that this is a serious issue that are facing the youth of our province, and we are committed to make sure that the very cigarettes and cigarillos that the member has identified, even though we are going to consult, that's the area that we are targeting, and we want to keep our youth free from having access to those.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if we've learned anything in the first year of the Liberal government, or if they've learned anything, it is that actions speak louder than words. Those are warm, fuzzy words, Mr. Speaker, but by their actions today, the government's going to allow flavoured tobacco, and the only ones that benefit are the big tobacco companies that we just talked about. He doesn't need to consult with them. He already gave them their way, Mr. Speaker. What does he have to say to the parents of young Nova Scotians who are counting on this bill and counting on them to protect their children?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There are, in fact, areas now that we will have an opportunity to take a look at. The opposition brought forth making no exemption for menthol. Cancer Society brought forward papers that are flavored as well. We have one of those situations in our province that we are also going to take a look at, and that is you can't buy a tobacco product until you're 19 years of age, but there's nothing which prohibits a 16, 17, or 18-year-old from actually smoking. We're going to take a look at that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I, too, on behalf of the NDP caucus, would like to extend condolences to our Premier on the loss of his brother. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Deputy Premier. Mr. Speaker, in 2010, Canada became the first country in the world to take action on flavoured tobacco products, banning the use of additives that contributed to making cigarettes and cigars more appealing to young people. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, as Canadians and Nova Scotians would soon learn, big tobacco are masters when it comes to finding loopholes that keep young people addicted to their products, the next generation of people in our healthcare system, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the acting premier is this. This week, the Liberal government had a chance to close the loophole that allowed flavored tobacco to be sold in Nova Scotia. Why did it back down?
The Honourable Deputy Premier. The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that, and especially former Health Minister. She knows my views on smoking. One of the areas that we're going to see here very, very quickly is that, in fact, we all know that the federal government got snookered by big tobacco because as they outlawed cigarillos and flavoured tobacco for less than 1.4 grams, the tobacco industry simply made their product larger and went above the 1.4. The federal government is about to close that loophole. We'll have consistency across the country, and in fact are going to 6 grams, which means that only cigars will be allowed on the market.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Nova Scotians just got snookered by their own provincial government. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to flavoured tobacco, the research is in. We know the product is targeted at youth. We know it leads to nicotine addiction. We know this product needs to be banned, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, the minister himself in December of 2013 told Global News, and I quote, "Any way that we can keep our youth away from smoking flavored cigarettes, we will certainly move in that direction. So my question for the acting premier is this. Why is this Liberal government no longer doing anything it can to keep youth from smoking flavored tobacco?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We know that our youth cannot purchase any tobacco if they are under 19 years of age. We have now closed the loophole with the e-cigarette because they could go into a shop and purchase the e-cigarette and the e-juice. We have closed that loophole. And again, it's another way of cutting down that area, in fact, in which our youth can start to be addicted to nicotine.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Liberal government in Ontario has banned flavoured tobacco. The province of Alberta has banned flavoured tobacco. Doctors Nova Scotia wants a ban on flavoured tobacco. The Nova Scotia branch of the Canadian Cancer Society wants a ban on flavoured tobacco. Community health boards from one end of this province to the other want a ban on flavoured tobacco. So my question to the minister is this. Why does this government think it needs more time to consult with Nova Scotians before doing the right thing and banning flavoured tobacco?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, I think the member opposite, the former Minister of Health, had that opportunity. She let it slip from her fingers. You can be... What?
Order, please. Order. Order, please. Order. The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What the member opposite knows is that nothing was going to change in our province until May the 31st. We know that we can make changes prior to that, and over the next weeks and months, we'll consider, in fact, what the opposition brought forward, and that is not making any exemption for menthol. And so all of that will be considered and brought forward.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Deputy Premier. Up until today, the government was going to actually restrict flavoured tobacco products in the hope that it would prevent new Nova Scotians, young Nova Scotians, from taking up smoking, Mr. Speaker, because we know half of them start with flavoured tobacco. Well, the Deputy Premier is also the Minister of Finance. Now, for at least 6 months, the sales will go on. So I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier, how much more tax revenue is the government going to make while the current rules stay in place?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to answer the Honourable Member's question, and the fact was nothing would have changed until May 31st of this year at the best, and that doesn't affect this year's budget in any way.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if the government is going to flip-flop on an issue as important as this and say it's not about the budget, that's fine, but it still leaves the big question open. After all the work and all the agreement that we thought we had, that flavoured tobacco gets young people addicted and it's wrong and should be banned. If not for that reason, I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier personally, does she agree with going on with selling flavoured tobacco products?
The Honourable Deputy Premier. The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know that as of today's piece of legislation, we will have the most advanced legislation around the e-cigarette, which has become another introductory method of getting our youth addicted to nicotine. And we know that through the consulting process, this whole area of flavors will be addressed, and we'll see in a very short order that in fact we'll have again the strongest legislation in the country.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last night the Governor of Maine, Governor LePage, was re-elected. Hopefully that is good news for the Nova Scotians that want to see a successful run of the Yarmouth Ferry. The government has a commitment from Governor LePage to make a contribution for Maine to do its part for the Yarmouth Ferry, and so I'd like to ask the Deputy Premier, will she provide to this House, before the end of this session, all of the written details, the documents and correspondence from Maine to Nova Scotia that outlines exactly what commitment we can expect the government to collect on with regard to the Yarmouth Ferry?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I would like the Minister of Economic Development to answer that question.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Speaker, we certainly want to extend our well wishes to Governor LePage on his successful re-election last night. We've had a number of discussions with Governor LePage. In fact, the last chance that I had to speak with him was over the telephone. So unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, communications such as that, I'm not quite sure how the leader would want us to table those. Instead of tabling documents, Mr. Speaker, we've gone out and told Nova Scotians exactly what those discussions were, what those commitments were. They don't need a FOI pop. We've already shared it with Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, Governor LePage has won re-election, and now it is time for the government of Nova Scotia to collect on whatever the arrangement is. People in Nova Scotia, the taxpayers have put so much into that ferry run, they expect the government of Nova Scotia to hold the governor of Maine accountable for making sure that Maine does his part. Premier's just confirmed what he has is a phone call and nothing else. That's fine. I hope he can collect on it. It's only been a day, but it's time for the government of Nova Scotia to hold the government of Maine accountable for doing their part. So I will ask the Deputy Premier, when will the government be meeting with the governor of Maine to make sure Maine comes through as promised?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's very clear that we've been doing everything to work with our partners to try to ensure a successful ferry service, from our discussions with Governor LePage as well to the meeting that's coming up with the owners of the vessel as well, along with our other partners. Mr. Speaker, the people in Nova Scotia are well aware of the challenges that we face, but they've also seen the economic benefits that has come to this province with the restoration of the ferry service. Mr. Speaker, while we work through these challenges, it now becomes apparent that one of the biggest challenges we face in the success of the Yarmouth Ferry for Nova Scotians is the constant criticism from the leader of the Conservative Party and his caucus.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, we've heard from the Minister of Health directly about the risk of flavoured tobacco poses to Nova Scotia youth. He said, and I quote, "Preventing young Nova Scotians from getting addicted to cigarettes is a priority," end quote, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that for the House. So my question to the Minister of Health is simple. Why is the Minister allowing big tobacco interests to take priority over the health of young Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. We are taking those steps around e-cigarettes and not having our youth in Nova Scotia having access by going in a shop and purchasing the e-cigarette. That has in fact become one of the biggest gateways, in fact, to addiction to nicotine. And over the coming weeks and months, we will in fact end up with a stronger piece of legislation than where we are now.
The Honourable Minister, Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister knows that we're talking about flavoured tobacco. There's no tobacco in the e-cigarettes, Mr. Speaker. We didn't just hear from the Minister of Health on this issue. We heard from Liberals, Mr. Speaker, his colleagues, including the member from Clare Digby, who said, I quote, "We're here as legislators, more than anything, to protect youth and our young people," end quote. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. I couldn't agree more with that member, Mr. Speaker, so I'd like to ask the Minister, why is he ignoring his own advice, the advice of his caucus members, advice of the community health boards, the Canadian Cancer Society, young people themselves, even those who do use vapour cigarettes and e-cigarettes, Mr. Speaker, by continuing to allow flavoured tobacco to be in reach for Nova Scotia youth?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know the direction that our government will work towards. We will, however, do consulting. This government and two former ministers of health had 4.5 years to make some changes and strengthen the legislation, and you know what happened during that 4.5 years.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you will be to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, as the Minister would know, about a year ago I asked a question with regards to dialysis in the Valley and a decision that could possibly be reviewed once again. It was to where the regional dialysis unit or a dialysis unit may go. I know that members of my community and other communities throughout the Valley have been surveyed over the last number of months, and I wonder if the Minister could tell me and all members of this House today where that report currently lies.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I first want to comment on the member for Hants West and on how strong an advocate he's been for getting dialysis in his community. There is a provincial renal program. We know that, in fact, the next site to be developed is Kentville area, which in fact will overlap and serve many of his constituents for the future. I know what he wants, and I could answer in his second part, but what I will promise the member is that he'll have that report in his hands next week.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the answer and the fact that we'll soon have that report. There are many who will be looking at it. There's about 40 or so, seems consistently, between 35 and 40 people traveling for dialysis treatment from my area, the constituency of Hants West. And so that brings me to my next piece here, Mr. Speaker. Most of those folks that are calling, their biggest concern is how am I going to get to my dialysis treatment? So the transportation issue remains number one, probably for most, Mr. Speaker. So I would ask the Minister if, in fact, as he's alluded to it, it sounds like Kemphill may be where the regional dialysis will go, and yes, that will serve folks from my area. Will there be some consideration for other travel arrangements perhaps looked at?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I know the member is speaking to the fact that he has a number of constituents who have fixed incomes, and even the very travel to dialysis is a problem and a huge challenge. And what I can offer the member opposite is that he can come to the department and have an opportunity to meet with those in the Department of Health and Wellness who oversee this program and in terms of any kind of support and have a discussion as to how that can possibly have a more positive outcome.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. Recently, concerns about the safety of guards and inmates have been raised at the Central Nova Scotia Correctional Facility. Most recently, an inmate required surgery after being assaulted by two other inmates. In 2013-2014, 119 assaults occurred at the jail. Now, Mr. Speaker, there are many causes for violence, I realize, to occur in any prison, but can the minister provide some insight on why so many people are getting hurt in these assaults at this jail, or is it impossible to stop this kind of activity?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for that question. Safety continues to be of utmost importance to us. It's the safety of offenders, safety of personnel, safety of all Nova Scotians. It's a fact that these are prisons, these are jails, and unfortunately, we will continue to have incidents no matter how much protections we put in place. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, the most recent incident happened after one of the longest lockdowns at the facility, ever at the facility, and one intended to put an end to what the Director of Correctional Services called an accumulation of situations at the jail. So it sounds like things are escalating. Things are getting worse all the time. I'm actually going to remove something from my question because I don't think it's appropriate for everyone's ears in this legislature today. But when we think of some of the weapons that are used to attack guards and other inmates, and I'm not talking about what you might traditionally think of in terms of a weapon. Mr. Speaker, my question, what measures are being taken by the government to help guards and other staff who are dealing with danger, humiliation, and long-term medical and psychological impacts of assaults?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, I can understand why the Honourable Member is asking the question. And specifically, he's asking about Burnside. Burnside does house the most dangerous offenders in this province. And sometimes there are troubles that go on there. We have a zero-tolerance policy at these facilities. So anything and everything that is being, any kind of action that is taken into account, we hold it very seriously. So in terms of staff, we are continuously working with our staff. We're working with our unions to address any and all these issues. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, HRM has declared today, November the 5th, as Crosswalk Awareness Day. The most recent statistics show that car-pedestrian collisions have increased by almost 70% in the last 6 months compared to the same period last year, and I shall table that. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of TIR is, given the dramatic increases in car pedestrian collision in the first half of 2014, what work is his Road Safety Action Committee doing with HRM to address this issue?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, thank the Honourable Member for the question. Obviously, the crosswalk safety is a very important issue. The stats we're seeing recently and in recent years are alarming. I know that the HRM has significant issues. Obviously, traffic congestion and the number of pedestrians really amplifies that issue. I can tell you that the Road Safety Advisory Committee, Mr. Speaker, that we have access to, it's laced with the most professional people in terms of peace officers, road safety engineers, advocates for the community, including Norm Collins, quite often gives us advice and advocacy work on the crosswalk safety issue, Mr. Speaker. So we work very closely with the regional municipalities, not just the HRM, all across this province. We do whatever we can, Mr. Speaker. There are national standards in place. We make sure they're enforced, and any support we can give, we certainly are there to do so. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne, on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, car pedestrians collisions can be deadly. The latest numbers show that the current enforcement practices and educational programs are not working. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, what new initiatives is the department undertaking to address this issue, not just in HRM, but in the communities across Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for the question to the Honourable Member. It's certainly a challenge. There's a number of issues that are identified by the National Transportation Association on how we bolster crosswalk safety. Obviously, there's issues with respect to signage, Mr. Speaker, that drivers understand that the crosswalks are coming, so painting on the roadways, the zebra striping, which certainly increases awareness, the lighting above the crosswalks, certainly anything that can be done from a driver's side. But also, Mr. Speaker, there is a message to be sent to pedestrians as well. This is a shared responsibility. We're seeing issues more prevalent that actually take place at areas where there's traffic lights. So, Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of work to be done. Again, the Road Safety Committee is working on innovative ways to do that. Certainly, like everything else, resources are at the forefront, but we do our best, Mr. Speaker, and we do work closely with those municipal units to make sure we're keeping our pedestrians and our drivers safe. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Finance. The Minister has pushed for a new provincial holiday since 2004. Mr. Speaker, new holidays are not free and, in fact, impose significant additional costs on both businesses and government. And I don't know whether the government consulted with business or asked them how much it will cost them, but does the minister have an estimate of how much the new holiday will cost the government in holiday pay?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as the members of the House know, this is something that I have individually championed for many years, and we have introduced in the House. Mr. Speaker, we have the fewest number of statutory holidays of any province in the country, and the people that are in the business community understand that as well. And in fact, several years ago, the CFIB did their annual survey. They do it actually more than that, four times a year or more often they survey. They included that question, and at that time, 40% of businesses thought it was a pretty good idea. So I think it's only grown since then.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I didn't hear how much it was going to cost, so I'm going to say it's probably very expensive. In fact, a CBC News report dated July 28th, which I will table, says the February holiday will cost the Capital District Health Authority $1.1 million, the Cape Breton District Health Authority $700,000, the IWK $300,000. All told, Mr. Speaker, the new holiday will cost our provincial health authorities $3 million. So my question for the minister today is, what services will be cut in what departments to cover this additional cost?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And just to speak directly to the question of the cost of that, those figures were not well worked out when we went back. Those numbers came down, and in fact, the individual district health authorities will be absorbing the cost of that holiday. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrooks, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Minister of Environment. Yesterday, I asked the Minister about a plan in the works to dispose of treated fracking wastewater in Amherst. And the Minister said, and I quote, at this point, we haven't received a formal application for this process. And I will table that, Mr. Speaker. Just because there's no application doesn't mean that the department isn't still involved, Mr. Speaker. So could the minister please confirm his department has been talking about this project with the town of Amherst and Atlantic Industrial Services?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can confirm for the member opposite that the representatives from the municipality have been in contact with local staff members in the Amherst and Truro offices. My understanding is those discussions were primarily based upon trying to come to an understanding with respect to the data and the information that we have pertaining to the contents of the water, so previous test results and so on. So they're trying to understand the status of the water, and that was the nature of those conversations, as I understand.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrooks, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his response. And I do want to acknowledge the meetings that were held in Colchester County in the Truro area before the disposal of fracking wastewater was approved at the Lafarge cement plant in Brookfield, although there are still a lot of questions and concerns that residents in that area have about that project. However, in this case, this project seems to have been sprung on the people of Cumberland County, and it sounds like they still have many unanswered questions, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Minister of Environment is, could he please explain what consultation the province has done so far with the residents of Cumberland County and what further consultation they plan to do with the residents before approving this project?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It seems that we're running into a common theme with questions coming from that particular party over there, where municipalities are considering various projects and initiatives before they make a decision themselves. It's an appropriate time, I suppose, with UNSM here to reiterate this government's commitment to allow municipalities the autonomy and the authority that they have in their roles to represent their constituents as well. So in terms of us intervening and making decisions or anything preemptively on behalf of that municipality, we'll wait and see where they come up with their decision, and we will act accordingly as the regulator to provide the information necessary and make informed decisions with respect to any disposal of wastewater from this process. Thank you.
Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture. Mr. Speaker, last week in the House, the Taste of Nova Scotia held an event showcasing the incredible products which we are famous for, and I believe you, Mr. Speaker, indicated your pride in coming from an area where lobster industry is the biggest employer. In fact, Nova Scotia leads the world in lobster, and our province should be leading the charge on marketing hand-in-hand with industry. The industry needs a levy, Mr. Speaker, and the minister promised a levy, but last week the minister told a reporter that the levy will not be put in place. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is this. Will he admit he has fumbled the process and without delay put in a plan to achieve a lobster levy so our lobster industry remains competitive?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, we are going to this fall consult with the industry around a mechanism to fund marketing and improvements in the lobster industry. We will conduct those hearings or consultations before we decide how we're going to approach this. There's an opposition to a levy in some areas, and some areas there isn't, so we want to have this all sorted out before, so we can bring the adequate and proper legislation to the House.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for that, to the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, last year the Government of Maine passed a five-year funding bill, and Maine lobster producers are stepping up their marketing efforts due to that committed funding. The Lobster Council of Canada supported a 1% one-cent per pound levy, and this minister unveiled a 5-cent per pound with 3 cents going to quality. He was apparently unable to explain how this money would be used. Mr. Speaker, the minister's credibility has been seriously undermined in our industry. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the minister is this. Will this minister go back to the industry with a more realistic plan, work with them, and stop putting our valuable lobster industry at a competitive disadvantage?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We indeed do have a very concise plan of how we're going to move forward on this. We cannot move forward unless it's industry-driven. At this point, it's not industry-driven. There's not a proper process in place for doing this, and not a proper facility in place to how the money is going to be spent and what it's going to be done with at the end. Until we get those final conclusions and we consult with industry and it's industry-driven, we are not going to move forward.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In a FOIPOP released to our caucus last week, the total number of ER closures was reported to have decreased 29.8% from April 1st to August 31st, 2014. Get the good stuff out of the way first. But one hospital was closed 100% of the time, Mr. Speaker. Soldiers Memorial Hospital saw a 720% increase in the number of hours that ER was closed. So my question to the Minister of Health is why have the greatest increases in ER closures across Nova Scotia taken place in the Annapolis Valley region?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm not sure what set of calculations that he's actually used on these hours, and maybe he'll enlighten me more. I just know that in the past 4 months there's just been a couple of closures, and I know that the district has actually made a very significant move, and perhaps this is why during the last months. New doctors who are coming in get the extra training for trauma care, and it will be a requirement that they cover so many hours of ER time. So a tremendous improvement has actually been made.
The Honourable House Leader for the official opposition.
Thank you very much. And maybe the Minister can open his briefing book, briefing note 3.3. Soldiers Memorial Hospital was gone from 15 hours of closure to 123 hours of closure, which is a 720% increase, which really, you know, Mr. Speaker, doesn't hold a candle to how many hours Northside General has been closed, which is a total of 535 hours in that same that period. So while attending the Village of Kingston's annual general meeting past May, the minister suggested that a collaborative care centre may answer the needs of the community. So my question to the minister, when will the people of Annapolis Valley have confidence that there will be emergency health care available for them outside of normal business hours?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we see what we can do with statistics when actually in total hours. There are not that many of total hours of closure at Soldiers Memorial. In fact, as I said, the situation has improved quite dramatically over the last number of months. And we happened to hit a period where, in fact, one doctor who was scheduled for a significant number of hours had to leave for family reasons. And again, we didn't have that ability to tap into a provincial list and cover the ER. I know what I'm pleased with, Mr. Speaker, is that we've actually found, I think, what will be a long-term solution to what was a perennial problem.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. Mr. Speaker, in 2006, the people of Nova Scotia were promised 100% coverage of rural broadband by Rodney MacDonald. Since then, the Liberal Party has been critical that this has not been reached by successive governments. In 2012, the Liberal government passed a resolution at their policy convention that stated a Liberal government would, and I quote, exponentially develop IT infrastructure across this province and fully commit to broadband for rural Nova Scotia program, end quote. And I will table that later, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, students at Greenfield Elementary School in Queens Shelburne has written to the Minister of Education with their concerns, and I will table that. So my question, when will the Minister commit to exponentially developing IT infrastructure for the communities surrounding Greenfield Elementary?
Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, the member is correct. It was in 2006 under a Conservative government that the commitment was made to provide 100% coverage for rural broadband throughout Nova Scotia. And as I've said before, I have no doubt that that was made with the most honest of intentions. Unfortunately, with the geography of Nova Scotia and where certain communities are situated, it's become a challenge for providers to be able to provide the level of service that should be provided. But the member seems to have forgotten a certain period of time. I believe it might have been from 2009 to 2013, where he was a minister in a government that failed to address this issue. So just in case you may have forgotten, but Mr. Speaker, as I've already said, we are working closely with our providers in Nova Scotia. We are as well waiting to get more specific details on the recently announced federal money to increase the speed to 5 megabytes per second throughout the country, and look forward to seeing what opportunities that might bring to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. But I said successive governments. It wasn't at our policy convention. Mr. Speaker, the students of Greenfield Elementary say, and I quote, "We are hoping that the government can look into our situation and come up with an action plan," end of quote. This contract for rural broadband service is being renegotiated as we speak. So my question, Mr. Speaker, why won't the minister fulfill the Liberal commitment to expand IT infrastructure and work with the area surrounding Greenfield to work on a solution?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, the member has made a statement about renegotiating a contract. I'm not quite sure which contract he's referring to when he says that. I believe all members of the House know that the current contract that was signed in 2006 is scheduled to expire at the end of this year, which is why we continue to be talking to the providers to ensure those who are without service or with service that is deemed inadequate are able to obtain the high-speed service that we want to see all Nova Scotians have. There has been some challenges along the way. I think we do have to have a discussion as to whether it was realistic to expect there would be 100% coverage. We want to see as many Nova Scotians as possible, which is why we do look forward to some of the new technology that's coming out. The announcement by the federal government, which we await to see just exactly how much funding will that provide to Nova Scotians so that we can try to benefit from this increased high speed for all the residents of our province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Mr. Speaker, data on student assessments in Nova Scotia has shown that there is a considerable variation in results across the province. In both math and reading assessment results, there are significant differences across our school boards. For example, in 2012-13, the percentage of students who met expectations in grade 8 reading ranged from 74% in one board to 62% in another. In 2012-13, the percentage of grade 8 students who met expectations in math ranged from 72% in one board to 40% in another. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, could the Minister explain these varied assessment outcomes for students in different school boards throughout this province?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member. As the member would know, there are a number of assessments that we do in our schools. We do our in-class assessments that are teacher-made. We do provincial assessments. We do standardized tests for both nationally and internationally. And I think the important thing, Mr. Speaker, is what we do with the results of those tests. And the situation that the member has raised causes us to look at what are the best practices. Are there things that we can do that can help influence those? Because we do know that there are a number of things that come together in order to determine a student's level of success on assessment. So we would use best practices to make sure we can improve.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, academic success and skills in math and reading are critical for our young people as well as the future of this province. It is imperative that students across the province have access to the same high-quality education. Today's young students will be our leaders and make up the labour force of tomorrow in this province. The question to the Minister, will the Minister's Education Action Plan that will be presented in January provide concrete steps to improve student performance across all of Nova Scotia's school boards?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the report that was received when 19,000 Nova Scotians spoke and gave us their opinions and also gave us their advice, we recognized that standards across the province were important. We recognized that there were some parents and teachers who were responding with concerns about that. And to answer the member's question, there certainly will be some actions in the plan that's presented in January that speaks to not only performance but improvement in that level of performance.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, in the Ivory Report, it was said time and time again that we had to start thinking outside the box and use our natural resources to a better effect. I wonder if the Minister could give us an update on where negotiations are with the Donkin Mine.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There are ongoing conversations between the private entities that are involved in that sale of the mine. I will let the member know that our government has began our due diligence process. As that process continues, we'll be informing the public at the appropriate moments.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Minister, for your answer. I was wondering if the Minister could give us a more definite timeline on what's taking place and when we can expect some news on the Donkin Mine situation.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, there are still ongoing conversations that are held in confidence between the private parties that are continuing their conversations. At the appropriate time, which I hope will be very soon, we'll be informing the public on the process, on the progress we've had on this particular file. And it's obviously my hope, as I know it's the hope of every member in here, that that news will be good news.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. Mr. Speaker, giving students a best start in life with the basics of math and reading skills were one of the themes coming out of the most recent education panel. Giving teachers and support staff the proper tools to educate our youngest citizens is therefore important. The government released a tender on Monday that would purchase 40 high-tech 3D printers, which retail for $3,500 a machine, and I will table that. Question to the minister. When will the minister tell us the criteria for which schools will be receiving these printers and how those schools will be chosen?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite. The tender that the member is referring to is what we would call a standing offer, where we are able to go out and call for tenders that will give us the best price possible. That goes on a standing offer, and as schools wish to purchase, they already have a standing offer that they can go to, which gives them a better price than if they could do that individually. So there are not, we're not saying that there are 45 or 40 3D printers purchased. We're saying the standing offer is there to allow them to be purchased if needed.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much for the answer. Mr. Speaker, I also would like to ask the minister, if the government is going ahead with this type of purchase, they should know that in 2013, Public Safety Canada launched a study to look into concerns about the types of objects these high-tech 3D printers can print, and that includes 3D guns. So, and I will table a CBC article that talks about these type of concerns. So my question to the minister is, can the minister commit to ensure policies and guidelines are developed to guarantee these printers are going to be used appropriately and safely?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, Mr. Speaker, we have to recognize that the teachers who are delivering programs in our schools take the utmost care in what and where and how their students are performing. Mr. Speaker, we recognize that the 3D printers are an integral part of delivering the tech ed programs in grade 7 through to grade 12, and I can assure the member and all members of this House that those will only be used with the best interest of the student to support curriculum and to ensure that students are not into an environment or a site or using them for some other purpose.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. The Honourable Member for Bedford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I beg leave to make an introduction. I would direct the members' attention to the East Gallery, where we are joined today by Councillor Tim Outhit, who is the councillor, the HRM councillor for Bedford-Wentworth. I spoke about Councillor Outhit yesterday and his Remembrance Day program. If he would please rise. And he is joined today by his daughter Emily Outhit and family friend Patrick Liebman, and they are here for Take Your Kid to Work Day.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, and I appreciate just having a moment to make an introduction as well, if I could.
Permission granted.
Thank you very much. There are two people I would like to introduce in the gallery today who have come. One is a student from Millwood High School.